I've been reading consecutively through the second canto and into chapter 7, scheduled incarnations. And this morning we're going to be discussing Vamana. There's two verses in a row. Most of this chapter, just one verse. What precedes the this chapter is Purusha Sukta confirmed, and in Purusha Sukta confirmed, Brahma is speaking to Narada. Brahma is explaining the process of creation and the role of the Purusha avatars. And to keep it simple, after he describes the Purusha avatars and their relationship with creation, he then describes the Leela avatars and other forms of the Lord as they appear within this world. And he has a lot to say before he does that about the transcendental nature of the personality of Godhead, the unlimitedness of himself and his potencies, and the limited living being is not able to understand the unlimited except to the degree that the unlimited discloses that to the devotee. And because the devotee is devotee, to some degree a devotee can understand. He covers this subject back and forth several times. So he's encouraging Narada, which means he's encouraging us to listen with submission, not to use material yardsticks to try to understand how does he do this, how can this happen, but the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Lord being manifested. And in those leelas, he is providing subject matter to attract the hearts and the minds of the conditioned soul to become attached to him, and by becoming attached to him, become detached from the illusory material arrangements and purify these two things: develop attachment for the Lord and to purify our consciousness. So the leela just before is Gajendra, and in a very wonderful way the Lord reciprocates with the submission of Gajendra in his really desperate condition. Then immediately after that is Bali. And there are two verses. I'll read them both. The Lord, although transcendental to all material modes, still surpassed all the qualities of the sons of Aditi, known as the Adityas. So there were 12 sons, and although the other 11 sons were the demigods as Lord Vishnu, the last of the sons of Aditi, Vamana surpassed the qualities of all the other great sons of Aditi. The Lord appeared as the youngest son of Aditi, and because he surpassed all the planets of the universe, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the pretense of asking for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land, he took away all the lands of Bali Maharaj. He asks simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possession. Embedded within this narration is a little cultural point or a law of the land point. While acknowledging that everything belongs to Vishnu, to the personality of Godhead, we can rightfully claim to be secondary proprietors. It becomes his property. It's rightfully so. Like when Drupad was defeated by the Kauravas or by the Pandavas, he was brought before Drona. The understanding immediately was there. What was the property of Drupad is now the property of Drona, because these were his students, this was his dakshin. It was theirs, but then they gave it as dakshin to Drona, who didn't have to lift a pinky. He just sent his students. They kept. So it was now his kingdom, and he gave back half the kingdom, as was their promise in childhood. In one sense, just protecting the religious principles of Drupad. So, when a king defeats another king in combat, then it becomes his rightful property. So Bali, in combat with the Devas, there's a really fantastic painting of Indra coming out of his palace, and he sees huge armies of Bali, and he's finished. Bali conquered the whole of the heavenly region, which means, as it says later on, Bali was the secondary proprietor of the whole universe. The lower planetary systems, the heavenly planetary systems, and everything in between. Pretty powerful fellow. So when Indra went to Vishnu, help me, we lost our kingdom. So Lord Vishnu agreed to help him regain his kingdom. But he did it in such a way that the glory, these are the two options: defeat him in battle and give the kingdom back to Indra, or as a Brahmana, request charity, because the statement is here, without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possession. So instead of coming as a Kshatriya, he came as a Brahmana. And as a Brahmana, he came very interestingly as a dwarf Brahmana. This Leela is described in many of the Puranas, and in one place it describes when Vamana, they were performing a yajna, Shukracharya and Bali, and the whole yajna was going on. Just as it was about to begin, from a distance Vamana appeared on the horizon, and it looked like a second sun was rising on the horizon. It was so effulgent. Is there something we can do with that fan? Because that's what's going to come out in the recording. It'll stop. Okay. Brahmananda. At a sacrifice, it's always nice to invite elevated personalities to participate. And the reason is that the event is made all the more auspicious for the performer of the sacrifice. So they like to invite persons. Even without invitation, this effulgent personality was approaching. And after some time, they could make out it was a brahmana, and then they could specifically make out it was a midget or a dwarf brahmana, and a young boy, and very, very beautiful. And instantly, Bali was so excited, because his characteristic, known by Lord Vishnu, was that he liked to give charity to Brahmanas. He ruled the whole universe. It was his possession, and he liked to give charity to Brahmanas. So he was thinking, as soon as he saw, two things. How auspicious this sacrifice will surely be, greatly successful. And it was. And I want to give charity. Anything. So that was, those two thoughts immediately filled his heart. And then when Vamana came, so charming. If we think Prahlad Nrisimha is charming. Oh, Vamana, so the beauty of the personality of Godhead. Golden complexion, radiant like the sun, beautiful features, smiling, glancing. Everyone was so charmed, except Shukracharya. So that then, we'll then read the next verse. Bali Maharaj, who had put on his head the water washed from the lotus feet of the Lord, did not think of anything besides his promise, in spite of being forbidden by his spiritual master. The king dedicated his own personal body to fulfill the measurement of the Lord's third step. For such a personality, even the kingdom of heaven, which he conquered by his strength, was of no value. Prabhupada doesn't spend so much time on the Leela, he spends on message behind the Leela. So we can help us appreciate the message behind the Leela by first getting absorbed in the Leela, because the Leela has its spiritual potencies. Just to hear, although we all know what the story is, to hear those spiritual potencies are activated or like chewing a globjimin. We know that a globjimin is very sweet. We've had globjimins before, but when you chew on one, oh, all the juice comes out. Oh. Okay, so the Bhagavatam, spiritual potencies, they're meant to be heard and discussed and amongst devotees again and again, and it doesn't, not like the juice dries out. So when he appeared before Bali, Bali submitted completely. How greatly fortunate a brahmana, obviously so qualified as you, has come to this sacrifice, unannounced, unrequested. How great, what great fortune this is. I'd like to give some dakshin. Tell me what you would like. Oh, I'm Brahman, I don't require. No, I want to give something. Take my whole kingdom. Take my riches. Something, please accept. You want to give something? Okay, 3 paces of land, but your legs are so short. Mm-hmm. What? 3 paces of land? And Shukracharya said, don't do it. This is Vishnu. He's just come to trick you. He'll take away everything. But Bali had already promised. So a king doesn't go against his promise. And besides, he said, now that you've informed me this is Vishnu, the scriptures enjoin that one should surrender everything to Vishnu. So your instruction is something that's against scripture. So, sorry, Shukracharya, I have to neglect your instruction. Whatever reaction may be there for neglecting your instruction, I'm ready to accept, but I want to give. Look at his legs, 3 paces of land. So, you know, the first 2 paces, the entire universe, through the crust and shell of the universe, his foot penetrated and the celestial waters entered into the universe. So you've given your promise, 3 paces of land. With 2 paces, everything is covered. His body grew in gigantic proportion. That's a small, important item. And then pierced the universe. So then, third step right here, upon my head. So he submitted himself. Like, you know, this is the classic for Manasa Deha Geha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is like, it went surrender me and surrender everything. So surrender one's possessions, surrender your body, surrender yourself. And it wasn't, the verse is saying, it wasn't a big deal for him to surrender everything. It was insignificant in the presence of Lord Vishnu. He surrendered everything. So the lesson, Prabhupada says it in a number of ways. Here's one. By giving everything to the cause of the Lord, one does not lose anything, but he gains everything that could never otherwise be expected. What he gained was the eternal association of the personality of Godhead. And the Lord demonstrated that he was so pleased with Bali that he volunteered, I'll be your gatekeeper. And I'll make sure that no one comes and gives you harm. Personally. Little dwarf. But he's Vishnu, he's not, that's the form. Elsewhere it's described when Ravan was conquering the universe, he heard about the prowess of Bali. So after beating up on everybody else, he went down to the Sutala region and wanted to challenge Bali to a fight. But there was Vamana, little dwarf Ravana. And he ordered Ravana to leave. Ravana looked at the little boy, get out of my way. And so with that same foot that he covered the universe, he kicked Ravana. And Ravana went sailing to other regions, and Ravana didn't come back again. Got a powerful foot. Ram also, the dead remains of Dundubi, he kicked with his foot, just flipped the remains of Dundubi 90 miles in the air. The Lord's prowess is inconceivable. Who can kick anything 90 miles, but to speak of giant demon. Marich with one arrow sent him sailing in the air miles and miles away. one doesn't become the loser by surrendering, although by material calculation, it's quite obvious. You give something up, you have something less. It's not difficult to calculate like that. But in the matters of surrendering to the Supreme Lord, one doesn't lose, one gains in an inconceivable way. He says it elsewhere. He was not at all the loser by sacrificing the kingdom of heaven, which he had possessed by material strength. In other words, when the Lord snatches away one's hard-earned material possessions and favors one with his personal transcendental service for eternal life, bliss, and knowledge, such taking away by the Lord should be considered a special favor upon a pure devotee. There's voluntary surrender, and then there's the other kind, where when Krishna sees that one is wishing sincerely surrender, but is attached, and holds on to that attachment, and prays to Krishna, please help me. Krishna helps one. And I've seen quite often when Krishna shows his special mercy and takes away that attachment, the person is flustered. Hey, wait a minute. Why are you taking this away? Because of attachment. But the deeper thinking Vaishnava understands that's special mercy. You know, we come before the deity and we offer our prayers. Please make my heart pure for the holy name. By approaching you, please cleanse my heart of all dirty things. Whoops, not that one. I didn't mean that one. Wait. Slow down. Come back here. That's my attachment. So that's the involuntary system. And sometimes it's another form. It's calamity, and it looks like calamity. When it was after surrendering everything, then Vamana, dwarf Brahmin, this man should be punished because he promised me. And then he failed to fulfill. He should be punished. Bind him like a criminal. So he was tied up with ropes, like a common criminal. And Bali made no protest, saying, hey, wait a minute, I gave you everything. What else do I have? You know, what's the problem? Why are you treating me this way? Not fair. So he didn't do that. He was very happy, whatever the Lord wanted. His surrender was complete. And Bhagavatam describes then there's a whole big hubbub. There were different persons that came to discuss, was this right? Why did this happen? Why did the Lord do this? And, you know, some persons were complaining, some persons were supporting, some persons were neutral. Prahlad Maharaj came. This is just. And then the Lord said, after it was all, the hubbub was over, he said, I just wanted to demonstrate the unparalleled quality of Bali Maharaj. He was not just surrendered, totally surrendered. This is his feature of perfection, Atmani made in a full surrender. Full surrender means full surrender. So even humiliated, treated like a common criminal for his surrender, he made no protest. This is the quality of Bali. I just wanted you all to see, the world to see, what is the real quality of Bali? I personally, as he is fully surrendered and dedicated to me, I'm fully dedicated to him. I give him a kingdom grander than the kingdom of heaven that he's been ruling, and I'll personally protect him. So, a big part of this is quite a long purport, 2.5 pages. Prabhupada is discussing the importance of detachment. And he speaks, of course, on the voluntary detachment side. And essentially it's the path of nivritti. Nivritti marga is the path where one goes along in spiritual life, progressively detaching oneself from unnecessary things by the means of attaching oneself to the Supreme. So one who is desirous to become attached to the Supreme, assume that's all of us, then it's important instruction. We should progressively have less attachments for things. Prabhupada says it twice. One should possess less or nothing so that one may be freed from artificial prestige. The artificial prestige idea is thinking I'm something special because I have something. And this, they have something, is something perishable. So the fully surrendered soul gives up the false idea of proprietorship. The false idea of proprietorship is based on the false identity of oneself. Or proprietorship stems from conception of self. The I conception leads to the my conception. Whoever I think I am, that's going to identify what I think is mine. So if I think I am this body, then what is mine is what is produced from this body. And you can, the list becomes quite long. Things produced from this body. My work, and the fruits of my work, and all the things that the fruits of my work can purchase. And so prideful persons like to accumulate lots of stuff so that when people come they can see, oh, you have some nice stuff. Look at all this stuff. You're a very great person because you've got a lot of stuff. And then the pride itself is a byproduct of the misconception of self. Investing that sense of I in the false conception of I into the false conception of mine. My husband, wife, my children, my family, my relatives, my, just practically anything. You start with the adjective my, it's a false conception of what is really ours. So when you have a spiritual conception, and it specifically mentions this here, the mention is that by detaching oneself from material possessions, it assists coming closer and closer and closer to a spiritual conception. Say it the other way around. How can you have a spiritual conception as long as you're taking shelter of a misconception? How is it possible to have a genuine conception, a spiritual conception, while holding on to a material conception? Sure. Holding on to something, how can you grab another something? You have to let go of that something before you can. And so this Prabhupada taught us like this, that the word mantra means, man refers to mind and tra refers to release, or freeing the mind from misconceptions, so that we can then take the right conception. So the conception of self is where you begin, and then mind. So the practice of, not in some impulsive, extreme, artificial way of just giving something up, giving something up, giving something up. Rupa Goswami teaches that's artificial. Monkeys give things up. They live in the jungle and don't wear clothes and eat wild fruits and berries. So that's not the standard of being on a spiritual path, become a monkey. But attachment to the Supreme for the purpose of reducing the unnecessary things. So Prabhupada identifies what's unnecessary things? Artificial needs. It's activities of the senses. Here's how he writes it. Yeah, here. To achieve this detached state of life, where you don't just give things up, but you're fixed, and when, because of being fixed, then the attraction for lesser enjoyments goes down. On the one hand, you have a greater enjoyment, on the other hand, you have a lesser enjoyment. It's not a difficult thing. The greater enjoyment. Not a difficult thing. Because of that greater enjoyment. By that happiness within, then the allure of sense gratification, it's no thank you. No thank you. I mean, you know, you can say, get out of here, but you can say it politely and say, no thank you. No thank you. Remember in a lecture in New York, was a hot summer day in July in our Henry Street Temple, and was, even during Bhagavatam class, the windows were wide open. It was just blustering hot, and Prabhupada was describing in material life, people are chasing after sense gratification. Where is sense gratification? Where is sense gratification? And when one becomes a devotee, it works the other way around. Sense gratification comes and rolls at your feet. Please take me. Please take me. Prabhupada went like this. The devotee says, no thank you. I only want Krishna. And it happens like that. So, the path of progressively decreasing material involvement becomes possible. To achieve this stage of life, one must be firmly convinced about spiritual existence and its permanent effects. Is it not so? So, a clear spiritual conception, a full confidence, faith, that it exists, not just something in the mind, a strong conviction it exists, and its permanence, and its all attractiveness. And the more one hears and experiences, even to some degree, that spiritual reality, then to that degree, one can proportionately, one can, without difficulty, let this go, let that go, let this go, let that go. And then there's those very treasured things, our deep-rooted attachments. So those are ones that Krishna gives special help. Okay, you heard so many times, and you are maintaining this attachment. Let me help you. Rip. But Krishna may not do that. Then he's withholding his special mercy. But if he does that, it's a special mercy. To know exactly the permanency of spiritual existence, one must voluntarily practice possessing less or only the minimum to maintain one's material existence without difficulty. That's a phrase that enough to maintain body and soul together. That's the indication. So that our reserve energy cannot go towards accumulating, well, I need more. What if, that's one of the tendencies of household life, that one, you know, you stockpile things. Governments do that, you stockpile things. So that supposing there's a lean times. So that there is some provision for that. Rupa Goswami set the example for emergency something. But that's, you know, for emergency, and it's not for sense gratification, and that is also distributed on a regular basis, just as principle, as a principle of life. Therefore, one of the necessities of household or life is charity. One is in the position of legitimately earning or receiving, and therefore, in principle, one should charitably give. So he's writing, he's instructing, voluntarily practicing possessing less, or the minimum to maintain one's material existence without difficulty. So that minimum is like a fulcrum. It moves as you progress. As you progress, you need less, and you need less, and you need less. So someone that's not so advanced, their sense is, I need less, minimum is over here. Okay, I can't remain peaceful unless it's at least this much. But naturally, the fulcrum moves through spiritual progress. And less and less, and the requirement just becomes less. Now there's another thing in Krishna conscious life, and that is for the purpose of service, when it's genuinely, legitimately, in the realm of service, one may have various paraphernalia for service. Just like, you know, in the deity room, there are so many dresses for the deity, and so many, you know, nice palanquins and swings and so forth. The treasury of the deity is opulent for the service of the Lord. Or a king may keep a treasury, and it's, you know, the miser king likes to go in his treasury and just rub his hands together and think how much wealth he has and how can he get some more. But it's in a religious king's purpose. It's for the creating of a situation where sacrifices can be held, and you need opulence for sacrifice. And when sacrifices are performed, like Maharaj Ambarish did this, it's for the benefit of the citizens. And when sacrifice is done in the right spirit, the treasury replenishes itself just by the Lord's arrangement. But it shouldn't be done, okay, I'll use this much of my treasury because then that much more will come back. But just in principle. So for a devotee, you may keep a minimum or reasonable amount of paraphernalia for preaching purposes. But, you know, a devotee should be vigilant. If it's not needed, don't acquire it. Think multiple times before acquiring something. I need this for my preaching. Do I really need this for my preaching? Do I just want to have some more things in my treasury? And if I need it for preaching, then fine. And then use it and maintain it nicely because it's for Krishna. Modern advancement of civilization is based on activities of these senses. Or in other words, it is a civilization of sense gratification. Perfect civilization is the civilization of Atma, or the soul proper. Then he goes through, the Vedic literatures lead us to that civilization of the soul. And he makes this distinction interesting. He says the normal or the healthy situation is where the mind is giving direction to the senses are acting above matter. Not the attraction of the senses to matter is dictating to the senses and then to the mind and then to the intelligence. So the Bhagavad Gita primarily deals with the intelligence of man, leading one to the progressive path of civilization of the spirit soul. Then the contrast is, Srimad Bhagavatam is the complete human civilization dealing with the subject matter of the soul proper. That's the graduate study. The intelligence giving direction to the mind then giving direction to the senses then acting upon matter by this higher order of things, leading to the civilization of the soul. And then Bhagavatam is the civilization of the soul proper. It's a nice comparison of the two literatures. As soon as man is raised to the status of the civilization of the soul, he is fit to be promoted to the kingdom of God, which is described in the Bhagavad Gita as per the above verses. The verses where he describes in the 15th chapter, Param Dham. So, Bali Maharaj was in this exceptionally opulent position, and he sacrificed all of it. He even defied Shukracharya because of the irresistible desire to simply surrender to and serve the personality of Godhead. So he accepted the Prabhupada's language here, the civilization of the soul, in favor of this illusion of acquiring paraphernalia and property and wealth and prestige and importance. And that's the challenge that everyone has, to become fixed in Krishna consciousness. We're not powerful kshatriyas like Bali, but you know, we have our own way of acquiring things and controlling and enjoying, and letting go of that is not easy for a conditioned soul. But the Leela is indicating how important it is to voluntarily, consciously, deliberately make those steps in life. Nice perspective on Vamana's appearance. Okay, any discussion? Some persons say like that, but no. He because the Bhagavatam says, because He was the king of the Daityas. He was given a kingdom in that region. But it was fabulously opulent. But it's not because he disobeyed. There was no wrong. Shukracharya was wrong. There are several places where this is discussed. One place is where Bhishma Dev speaks to Parashuram, where Parashuram is saying, "Marry Amba." I can't marry Amba. I made a vow to not marry. How can you ask me to marry? Based on political circumstance, I should violate a religious principle? Then he says there are three reasons, three circumstances where one may disobey the instruction of the spiritual master. And that's one of them. When the spiritual master directs to do something that's directly contradictory, directly in contrast with religious principle. One not only may, one should disregard that instruction. Neglect that instruction. And there's no offense. There's no offense. Well, what Prabhupada says in the purport is he did. For some time he ruled there. Here's what Prabhupada writes. Bali Maharaj, by gaining the transcendental favor of the Lord in exchange for his great material sacrifice, was able to have a place in Vaikuntha with equal or greater facilities of eternal enjoyment. Therefore, he was not at all the loser by sacrificing the kingdom of heaven. So, he had some service to do. Supposing Krishna wants one to do some service, and he gives his personal association while you're doing that service. That's the spiritual world. So he ruled there for some time, and then Vaikuntha. Something else?
You talked about Ravan Bali incidents.
Yeah.
But this Raja Mahabali, which of the Asuras and the Bali monkey of Ramayana, is it the same?
There are many versions, isn't it? the sighting that I just gave you is referred to in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And it doesn't say which version, but because it's quoted by Sanatana Goswami, that's good enough for me. I don't need to know which version, Valmiki or Tulsi or whichever, Ramayana. Something else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Jai.
Jai.